Hello, everybody, and thanks for downloading this special episode of Commanderin. We're trying something a little bit different this time around, so please let us know if you like it by going to @CommanderinMTG on Twitter, or CommanderinMTG on Facebook, or by writing to cast@CommanderinMTG.com. If you really like it, go to iTunes and give us a review and a 5-star rating. Every review and rating helps. And now, without further delay, let's go to Sean and Nate where they really class it up.
Welcome to Encyclopedia Commanderica, the segment where we go to the Gatherer website and click random card over and over and over and over again, and then we talk about how we would or would not use those cards in a game of Commander. I'm your host, Sean Kirkcopain-Watson, and your other host...
I'm Nate Burgess. Eventually, after the heat death of our solar system and the gravitational decay of our known universe, we will have talked about every single Magic the Gathering card in a Commander context.
Also, for those who might not know what Encyclopedia is, before the internet, people used to make their own Wikipedia out of paper as a bunch of thick books.
That's right, Sean. A book is a deck of oversized cards that is glued together along the edge of the deck. Now that that's settled, today we have made a list of the first random cards to be added to the Encyclopedia Commanderica. Let's begin.
Card 1. Tranquil Thicket. Okay, right, enough of the radio voice. Tranquil Thicket. Thanks for giving us a land, Gatherer. Tranquil Thicket is a land. It enters the battlefield tapped. It can tap to add one green to your mana pool, and you can cycle it for one green. So, what do we think of this card, Nate?
Well, I generally don't like lands that must enter the battlefield tapped. They need a good reason to do that, and I don't find cycling to be a good enough reason to use a tapped land.
Ooh, see, contentious. Card one, and we're already disagreeing. I run, there's a cycle of these cycling lands that cycle for one of their own colour. I can't remember what all their names are, but I run all these because if it's turn 10 and you draw into this, that's terrible, but for one green you can pitch it away and draw another card, and I find that's useful. Or if you draw it or early game, you're only losing a small amount of tempo to pick up.
Well, you might say it's useful, but I will say that cycling is a signal to the rest of the table that you don't already have the cards in hand to deal with the board state, so it's harder to use EDH diplomacy if the table knows that your position is weaker than it seems.
Never thought about it like that. Yeah, okay. Interesting. There's not a lot to say about it, really. It depends what you think about cycling. Entering the battlefield tap can be intensely annoying when you think, I just need one more land deck and I can go off or do what I want to do. And it gives you a land, but it takes the Michael out of you at the same time and goes, yeah, it's going to come in tapped, isn't it? You're like, oh, God's sake. Right, I've got nothing more to say about that card.
All right, next card.
Entry number 2.
Thorn of Amethyst. It's a casting cost of 2. It's an artifact. Non-creature spells cost 1 more to play. Now, I will say that I have used this in an early/outdated version of my Memnarch deck, but I took it out since my playstyle has evolved to be less taxing, and I'm using taxing as a term for cards that slow down the game in general by reducing everyone's mana base so that they can't respond as effectively. And I'll mention cards like Winter Orbs, Static Orb, Frozen Aether, and Grand Arbiter Augustine the Fourth.
Who would do a thing like Grand Arbiter, Nate?
You?
So, this isn't in my Grand Arbiter deck, but nor is the three other cards you just listed. That deck's more a pillow fort deck. Taxing. This deck's good in a place like Animar or anything that runs a heavy creature strategy for just taking tempo off your opponent. Tempo is something I think is an overlooked aspect of a lot of people's games, especially newer players. Tempo becomes slightly harder issue to get your head around at first. It takes a bit of experience to get used to.
I agree that this card might work well in Anamar Soul of Elements after I played him for a while. Potentially, you know, you could make your deck design that might mitigate the tax restrictions to make a card one-sided. Mm. And if you have something heavy in creatures like Anamar, then this card might work well. And, like, as a counterexample, if you have a deck that is heavy in artifacts, you might use Lodestone Golem, which is comparable to this card.
Yeah, so I think this card has its place in Commander. I'm not as against tax or winter effects as you are. I think they're perfectly fine. Sometimes you want a game to grind to a slamming halt before you win. Anyway, not much more to say about that. Entry 3 is Swarm of Blood Flies. It's 4 mana and 1 black for a creature insect from Khans of Tarkir. It's a 0/0 creature that flies. 5 mana for a 0/0. That's terrible, he say. Yeah. There's more, though. Swarm of Blood Flies enters the battlefield with 2 +1/+1 counters on it. Whenever another creature dies, put a +1/+1 counter on Swarm of Blood Flies. So, not a terrible card, this, by any stretch of the imagination.
It's not a good start. I mean, a flying 2/2 for 5 mana cost is not great. And I'll compare it to Kresh the Bloodbraided, which is also 5 converted mana cost, but he's a 3/3, and he has a much better version of this plus counter ability.
But he is 3 colors, and he doesn't fly, and he's legendary.
I don't see much use for this card, really.
You could see this card good in maybe an Athreos deck or like a Shadowborn Apostle deck. This would become pretty big and beasty pretty fast, where you're making your opponent lose a lot of creatures through things like Grave Pact, etc. You can get him for 5 mana. You can get it's a lot of work to get him up.
I would not use this in a Shadowborn Apostles deck when I could use Obnixilus and he would do the same thing.
Fair point. Okay, it's a good budget card, I think. If you're running a Pauper's, just whatever the format is where you can only run uncommons and commons, I think he'd be acceptable, but probably not in a mainline deck.
Yeah, I don't see much use for this guy.
Anyway, entry number 4.
World at War. 3 colorless and 2 red. Sorcery. After the first post-combat main phase this turn, there's an additional combat phase, followed by an additional main phase. At the beginning of that combat, untap all creatures that attack this turn. Oh, wait. There's more. Rebound. If you cast this spell from your hand, exile it as it resolves. At the beginning of your next upkeep, you may cast this card from exile without paying its mana cost for free.
I like this card a lot.
I have used this card a lot, and I have it in multiple decks, and I will continue to use this card.
Yeah, I used this card last night to get a couple of attacks off with a mana charge dragon to take a player out. It's a great card. I think a lot of people mentioned red in the context of being weaker in EDH for a couple of reasons. One, aggro isn't a massively powerful strategy in Commander. Two, a lot of playgroups and metas frown upon mass land destruction, so you're removing quite a powerful tool from red's wheelhouse. But one thing red is good at is the extra attacks over and over again, and this is probably the best example of a card that does that, in my opinion, because of the rebound.
It is, because of the rebound. In addition, with Jaleva, for example, the wording of the card is compatible with the combat timing of her ability, and it lets her attack and cast free spells twice for the next 2 turns. And not all of the double combat round spells are compatible with the combat timing of her ability, based on the wording of the card.
Is that because this one does it in your post-combat main phase, whereas a lot of the others do it when the creature attacks, and you've already attacked with Jaleva? Is that correct?
A lot of the other ones require immediate untapping and then in another combat phase.
Gotcha. So this is a great card. I'm pretty sure it's not actually that cheap. I think that's because it's in some other formats deck. Apparently other formats of Magic exist, people. Check them out, I guess.
Oh no.
But it's certainly worth picking one up. It was from Zendikar, I believe. It was a rare. Or was that Worldwake? Worldwake. It was from Worldwake. It's a rare. Not a lot more to say about that.
Well, I'll say in my experience, it gives Krenko Mob Boss extra waves of attacking goblin hordes. And I'll put a capital H on the word hordes. I'll say around a Voltron damage commander, such as Uriel the Miststalker, this card makes everyone at the table poop their pants. So, do you have a commander that has red and enjoys attacking opponents, like Zergo Helm Smasher, or Gisela, or Xenagos? Yeah.
Maelstrom World at Wonder. War.
Yeah, exactly. World at War is highly relevant to several red-colored commanders.
Mandex. Right, great card, great card. So, entry number 5. So our first non-modern bordered card for Encyclopedia Commanderica, it's the, forgive me on pronunciation with this one, Mwanvuli Ooze. It's 1 green for a 1+* 1+* creature. Summon Ooze. Cumulative upkeep of 2 colorless mana. Mwanvuli Ooze has power and toughness equal to 1 plus its last paid cumulative upkeep. So you're paying a quite a hefty upkeep of 2 colors, but it is getting bigger and bigger. Meh.
I have no idea what to do with this thing. I don't know why this card exists.
Like, back when this happened, which was Weatherlight, I believe, or around that time, Tempest Block, the cumulative upkeep was big, and the only real 2 cards you see with cumulative upkeep on them seeing any play in our format is Braid of Fire and Mystic Remora.
Yeah, that's decent.
Yeah, but that allows you to draw cards, and Braid of Fire gives you free mana. So drawing cards and giving you free mana are 2 of the most desirable and powerful effects in Magic. Full
stop. I like them.
Yeah. Paying all your mana into what? So you play him down. You're going to have to play him. If you can't play him early game, otherwise you're playing a 1-1 that dies next turn, I guess. Or takes all your board presence away because you're not playing any other spells. Playing him late game. Let's say you play him on turn 7 and then hit a land drop on turn 8. So you've paid a total of 4 mana for a 3-3. Followed by next turn, you've paid a total of 7 mana for a 5-5.
I have no idea. I don't know. If you're playing a commander in green that likes to fill their graveyard, then and you have nothing else to play, I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah, that is a terrible card. Don't buy it, kids. Don't do it. Yeah, it's awful. So, moving swiftly along from that awful nonsense, entry number 6.
Dark Ritual. 1 black. Instant. Add 3 black to your mana pool. This is old school. Now, if you have a single opponent that has 20 life, then there are ways to combo and win with this card in the first 2 turns. On the other hand, if your 3 opponents each have 40 life, then you probably won't get that early combo. And this card is much less useful overall in Commander than it is in lesser formats. And I'm using the word lesser in the terms of number of opponents and life totals, of course, not as a philosophical statement upon their quality.
I will say it as a comment on their philosophical statement on their quality.
I was intentionally trying to avoid that.
Well, you know. So I've done with this since, this was way back in the day, on Exodus block when I was playing. I've got a turn 2 kill with one of these. So turn 1, dropped a 1-1 for 1 black. Turn 2, attacked with it, cast a Dark Ritual, which cast a second Dark Ritual off itself for 5 black mana. Cast Hatred for 19, which is I pay 19 life, the target creature gets +19/+0, and just hit someone for 20. Turn 2. It's not too shabby. Is it worth a card in your deck? I've seen it get play. Very heavy black strategies that want to, like mono black, it sees some use because mono black doesn't ramp very well. So it can be an early little boost to get a big demon down or some such thing. Yeah, you can get a turn two Abyssal Persecutor with one of these out, which is always nice. But saying that, you can get a turn two Abyssal Persecutor out with a Soul Ring and two Swamps, can't you?
Sure.
Yeah, it's fine. It's got its place. And it's so cool. Every time you resolve one, everyone goes, Dark Ritual. I see. Old school. I like it.
Old school. High five.
Yeah.
You get a mental high five from the table.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if you drop Prodigal Sorcerer, everyone goes, well, that's not a good card, but back in the day, that was the bomb. There you go. I've got a couple in my collection. Occasionally drop them into mono black. And then they normally get replaced by something else. So that's everything you need to know. So, entry 7. Explosive Vegetation. Or, for you Spanish people out there, Vegetación Explosiva. As this is the first Spanish card that made it into our group, so everyone always says this card under its Spanish name. Explosive Vegetation is a green sorcery for 3 and a green. Search your library for up to 2 basic land cards, put them onto the battlefield tapped, and then shuffle your library. Simple as that. This card's seen a lot of play and a lot of reprints. What do you think, Nate?
It costs the same as Skyshrog Claim, but it's not as good since the basic lands come in tapped instead of dual land or shock land forests being able to come in untapped. Now, it's slightly better effect than Cultivate and Kadama's Reach, but it's not one mana better. And for some reason, which I don't understand, this card is slightly more expensive money-wise on TCG Player right now
than
Skyshroud Claim. This is more expensive than Skyshroud Claim.
I suppose if you desperately need to go and get like a Plains or something, this will help you where Skyshroud Claim won't, if you happen to have already played your dual hands.
Savannah.
Well, yeah, that's a fair point. I do run this card, but I run it as like my fourth line green ramp sorcery. I'll always run Kadama's Reach, Cultivate, and Skyshroud ahead of it.
All right.
But in a deck that wants heavy ramp, it's certainly in the suite. You know, it's like it's the diabolic tutor of ramp sorceries.
All right.
That's a good analogy. It's not the most desirable, but it will get a job done. Yeah, if you're playing green, you should probably have a couple kicking in your binder.
I'm not convinced.
Oh, you will be. You will be. Oh, no. Oh, it's not that good.
You will be.
You will be! Sorry, Garrett, go away. Entry 8.
Horobi's Whisper. One colorless and 2 black. Instant arcane. If you control a swamp, destroy target non-black creature. Oh, wait. Splice onto arcane. Exile 4 cards from your graveyard. As you cast an arcane spell, such as Kodama's Reach, you may reveal this card from your hand and pay its splice cost. If you do, add this card's effects to that spell.
Wow, splice onto arcane seems like a really powerful ability. I'm sure that's going to be printed loads.
I have never seen this card before.
It is a poor removal spell. So for 2 black and 1, you could have, well, I don't know, Hero's Downfall off the top of my head. This is a bad card.
I've never really tried a splice deck, and I don't really want to.
Now, I did one summer have a job as a Horobi's Whisperer. They had all these wild Horobis that needed taming, and I went up there with my rugged mountain boots on.
Hey, you. Hey, Horobi.
Hey, Horobi, chill out. Calm down.
Come over here.
Calm down, Horobi. Hey,
come on out. I got free candy in my van.
What, do you want a sugar lump? Do you? He's a good spirit. Who's a good spirit? Good boy.
But other than having nostalgic value for me, no, this card's awful. Don't do it, kids.
Yeah, it is.
Which brings us swiftly along to our next card. Entry 9. Solarion. Solarion is a 7 to cast artifact creature. It's a rare from 5th Dawn. It's a 0-0, but it has Sunburst, which means this comes into play with a +1/+1 counter on it for each colour of mana used to pay its cost. So it's between 0 and a 5-5. It has Tap, double the number of +1/+1 counters on the Solarion. So, this is a if you're running a Wooburg deck, this is a pretty good creature, isn't it?
Well, as an artifact creature that benefits from 5-color mana bases, you might think that this card would be good in a Reaper King deck. Now, I tried this card a few versions back, and it was consistently underwhelming. I wasn't happy when I drew it, and I wasn't happy when I played it. Now, if I really want an artifact creature beater, I'd rather pay one less mana for a Wyrmcoil Engine or even a Steel Hellkite. And if I really want a creature that doubles encounters and I already have access to green, I'd rather pay two less mana for a Colonian Hydra. And in my experience, the only Sunburst card that I found was useful was Engineered Explosives.
Yeah, that's a good card, Engineered Explosives. I've used that in Modern a few times. So, this card, you've touched on a category that I would refer to. Oh, I need to think of a pithy way of putting it. But it's when a card looks like it should be good. You stick it in your deck, and every time you draw it, no matter what quadrant of the game you're in, it never feels very satisfying to resolve. You always go, I wish this was something else. Just anything else.
Like, yeah, this is one of those.
Yeah, if it had haste, it might be all right, but it doesn't. Yeah, it's like you've met a nice lady at the club, you've had a few drinks, you've taken her back to your place, she's coming in for coffee, and you get home, you turn on the lights, and you realise she's a Kardashian. Like, oh, this looked like a good idea, but now I'm regretting all my choices.
Because you see all the paparazzi out the window already.
Yeah, and then you think about your dignity and self-esteem and how it's going to go down the toilet and...
What does all this have to do with Solarion?
I think Solarion's a Kardashian. It looks pretty. And on the surface, you think, yeah, this is a good idea. And then when you actually get it into the harsh light of play, you go, I really shouldn't.
Okay, I understand what you mean.
Yeah, so this card's a Kardashian. I've been Kardashianing a lot with Zathrid Demon. Every time I pull him, I go... Oh, he's going to start eating through my own creature base, and then he's going to start hurting me, and he's 6 to play. And even though his artwork is a big demon doing a kung fu kick...
Yeah, I'm kind of on that same level with Abhorrent Overlord.
Ooh, is he the guy that puts in harpies?
Yeah, he does.
I've had some good success with him. I've dropped him in when the only other creature I've got in play, or the only other permanent I've got in play, is Phyrexian Obliterator. And suddenly have an army of six 1/1 flyers and a couple of giant Phyrexian Obliterator. Now that's a card and a half.
Anyway, we're off topic.
Yeah, sorry. Anyway, he's a Kardashian Solarion. So, entry 10,
Vizcopa Guildmage, a white and a black. Creature, human wizard, 2/2. He's got some interesting abilities here. One and a white and a black. Target creature gains lifelink until end of turn. He's got another one. One, a white and a black. Whenever you gain life this turn, each opponent loses that much life.
This is a great card. It's just fantastic. It's perfectly, from a pure design perspective, it's perfectly designed for its color base.
There is a persistent white-black theme of combination life gain and opponent life loss, and the white-black extort keyword is the showcase example of that.
Yeah, so this card goes infinite with Exquisite Blood. So Exquisite Blood is enchantment. Whenever an opponent loses life, you gain that much life. So you kick off the second ability and just hit them for a point of damage, and then they lose all their life, and you gain all their life.
Right, and Sanguine Bond is an enchantment that costs 5 CMC and approximates the second ability. So casting this Guildmage and activating the second ability in the same turn also costs 5 CMC.
Yeah.
So if you're the type to infinite combo out with Exquisite Blood and Sanguine Bond, then you probably already have this Guild Mage in your deck as a backup combo.
So if you didn't want to do anything truly broken with it, which is two card infinite combos, its first ability is really nice. So what you need to remember about these things is you can activate both abilities. Neither of them are tap abilities. You can activate the second ability twice, which means your opponent, every time you gain life, your opponent loses that much life twice. They create two separate sort of time-stamped effects. She is really, really good. I think this is a great card. It's one of the, of all the Guild Mage cycle, the 20 different Guild Mages that they've printed over the two Ravnica blocks, this is one of the best, in my opinion.
I would suggest some commanders that go with this guy include Aloro, Ageless Ascetic, Obdazat, Ghost Council, and the other Ghost Council of Orzhova. Now, players of other formats might know of Siege Rhino, which has a similar colors and the same kind of ability. But Siege Rhino hasn't got much traction in Commander, but it has been dominant in other formats.
Yeah, so Siege Rhino is an Abzan, so green, black, white for a 4/5 creature that when it enters the battlefield, target opponent loses 3 life and you gain 3 life. That in a smaller format is really, really super powerful because 5 mana is tough to get. 5 toughness is really hard to break through with removal that's available to you. It's in black, so some of the more classic spot removal spells don't affect it. It's a good card. In Commander, it's an alright card. It's a good early game card, but if you draw it late game, it's just like, well, you know, it's an alright blocker. I gain 3 life, I guess, but it's all kinds of meh. This lady is brilliant, though.
Versatile. He's got versatility.
Versatility! So, that concludes Entry 1 of the Encyclopedica Commanderica. Hope you enjoyed listening, folks. We're going to pick another 10 random cards next time we meet up and see how that goes. And we are truly going to do hitting the random button. So no requests. You just have to see if your favourite card's there. And when we hit our 7,000th episode or whatever it would be to finish all of these, we'll let you know.
Yay!
And then once we've talked about each card in all of Magic individually, we're done. We'll let all the other podcasters know and we can all just stop.
That is true. That is the ultimate.
It's the end game. Hey, do you remember Commander in Podcast ended all podcasts ever? Yes, they did.
All right.
All right, folks. Till next time. Bye.